Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back and thank you for listening. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I have an email here from Sandra. Patrick, she says, I have been at my church for 5 years. Nice people, but so liberal. A lady who wears her LGBTQ pin wears it while volunteering at church. Now she's head of religious education. We even have an LGBTQ group at our parish, but I don't know what they talk about when they meet. The music is beautiful, but mostly modern worship music, a few hymns too. The youth minister organized at George Floyd Stations of the Cross and was an avid Biden supporter, even arguing with my 17-year-old daughter that abortion is not the number one issue. I am so disheartened. We are very active in the parish. I lead a youth band, and my oldest daughter works here as well as a sacristan, and my younger ones are altar servers. I don't know what to do. Our old priest passed away, but he was definitely not traditional in values. I had such high hopes for this new pastor, but he already put stuff about the garment, this, I think she means the seamless garment theory, in the bulletin in support of it. Sometimes I want to change parishes or even move to a state more in line with my values. What are your thoughts? And this is from Sandra. Sandra, I feel your pain. And I can imagine what your circumstances must be like. What you described here, fortunately, is not descriptive of what I would say now many parishes in this country are like anymore. It used to be what you described was what most parishes in this country were, but I've seen a steady, even though incremental, change, moving more back to sanity, back to tradition. And that's a good trend. I'm happy to see it. Obviously, it hasn't reached all the parishes, and yours is one example of that. So I guess what I would say is I, like you, would find some of these things intolerable and scandalous. And so for my own mental health, I would just simply find a different parish. I don't foresee that you could ever change things here. I mean, if you've got the director of religious education flaunting her support for the LGBTQ movement, I don't know whether she's in that community or not, but that's scandalous. If the youth minister is hectoring and badgering the young people, telling them that abortion is not the number one issue, even though the bishops of the United States overwhelmingly, sadly not unanimously, but at least overwhelmingly, they have said as a group that abortion is the preeminent moral crisis of our day. So youth minister opinions notwithstanding, that's what the bishops of the United States say, and they're correct to say so. It doesn't mean that these other issues aren't important issues or even very important issues. But poverty, problems with drugs, racism, and many other problems besides immigration, etc. They are urgent problems, no doubt, but they don't rise to the level of urgency that the continuous round-the-clock wanton killing of unborn human beings does. So if you've got the director of religious education, you know, in freak-out mode supporting LGBTQ, if you've got the youth minister in freak-out mode, badgering these poor kids, trying to tell them an abortion is no big deal. If, you know, all of the other stuff that you're describing and probably plenty more besides that is going on, I would just simply pull the plug and go to a different parish where there's more sanity, where there's more Catholicism, where there's more Jesus and less politics. I want Jesus. I don't want the politics. I want Jesus. I don't want the hip and cool agendas that people are forcing on others. So that's what I would do. Now, I recognize that, like pulling off a Band-Aid, it would probably hurt a little bit to have to disengage from these activities, these apostolates that you really enjoy. And I recognize that you probably have friends in that parish, and you probably, your children probably have friends. So it would be a bit like pulling off a Band-Aid. It would hurt a little bit. But for my own mental health, so that I wasn't always angry, I would just go to a different parish. That's what I would do. So since you asked for my advice, that would be my advice. I don't think you could change this. I think you'd be up against such a monolithic commitment to strange gods and strange ideologies that the chances of you toppling that and getting this parish back on track again, it seems to me that that's not likely to happen. So there you have it. I don't mean to be a defeatist, but sometimes the best thing to do is just simply move to a different location. Unfortunately. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Terry now in South Portland, Maine. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Patrick. It was very good hearing from Sam from Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a little familiarity with the place because I was in lay ministry back in the 70s, so that puts me, I was above the age of reason in those days, if you figure. Mm-hmm. My question, really my first question is, do you know if relativism has actually been declared or considered by the church to be a heresy?
Not as such, or not with that word that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But if you were to go to Pope Pius X's, there are two documents that I would recommend. One is the Syllabus of Errors, in which he lists a series of, I think it's probably at least 100 propositions that he says are at variance with authentic Catholic teaching, with the truth, with the gospel. And then the other one is called Pascendi Dominici Gregis, which is the Latin phrase for feeding the Lord's flock or feeding the Lord's sheep. And that is a treatise on modernism. And would that every Catholic read that. It's referred to in the short form as Pascendi, P-A-S-C-E-N-D-I. So it's his treatise analyzing the various forms of modernism. And relativism is one of those forms. And he describes it without necessarily, I have to go back and see if he uses the term. He may or may not use the term per se, but he certainly describes it in sections. So to my mind, to answer your question, I think that's about the closest thing I can think of to an official church statement on the issue of relativism. You'd find it in that document.
Okay. There's one comment about that I'd just like to add, because I do have, I picked up at the Catholic bookstore here some years ago, I picked up an old copy of Catholic Dictionary. And it has, under heresy, it's got the Greek lettering next to it and everything. It said, originally, there was no evil connotation or whatever to the word. It just meant choice or sect or something. So I thought that was very interesting in this day and age of talking about, you know, in this time of relativism, you know, choosing for self or... over God and you know, that whole kind of thing, that connection of, use of free will. We know we got to use of free will, but what you choose or who you choose is what's so, mm-hmm. I think, important. And so that's my looking at that, why, you know, in Pope Benedict saying the dictatorship of relativism, how that might actually be leading some thought to saying that might be time to consider relativism as the modern heresy, you know?
Yes, I hear what you're saying, and I don't disagree, but I just checked the document I referred to, so Pascendi Dominici Gregis, and I checked to see if the word relativism or relative, like relativist, is in there, and it's not, at least not in the English translation. I haven't checked any of the other languages, but in the English it's not there. But to your point, back in, 1907 is when Pope Pius X issued this encyclical. He anticipated everything that's going on right now. That's what makes it so remarkable, is that,
right,
in a way, it would be somewhat superfluous to repeat what he said there, because he said it so well. I think it bears repeating. And I think that because most people have never read this encyclical and they're unfamiliar with it, and we're sort of awash in the errors of modernism. We're floating in it. We're soaking in it everywhere, it seems. And most people don't recognize it because they're not familiar with what modernism is. And so his statement, I think, is all the more reason why we should return to that reminder about what the problem is. So,
yeah, because I get this Catholic newspaper. I don't know if I should mention the name on air or not, but it's is bringing up recently some of the things going on with it. Sounds like the majority of the bishops in Germany. So I know the last caller was referring to what was going on in her parish, but I don't know how someone, a faithful Catholic, is dealing with things in Germany this day and age, because it's just going over the cliff. I mean, I don't know how a whole country could be, you know, in this state at this time. You know, I mean, the church is universal, but it seems like there are certain times when a given group of people just are beset with this error. I mean, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, the German church is a particular example of where there's there are many problems, many difficulties, especially for those who are seeking to just be Catholic, just to be a faithful, traditional Catholic, and not necessarily traditional with a capital T, but just to try to live the gospel and be a good Catholic, a good follower of Jesus. Germany presents special difficulties for people in that regard, because a great deal of the hierarchy there, a great number of them, I would argue, have been contaminated with the heresy of modernism. And it's not just Germany. But the fact remains that if you want to be a good Catholic, sometimes you're going to find yourself in the catacombs. And that's okay. You know, previous generations have been in the catacombs before. I know I'm mixing metaphors here, but I think it's an apt metaphor. So many of the faithful find themselves in the catacombs just waiting for this time to pass by. And it will pass by eventually, I hope. But one other thing to remember, Terry, and I'm sure you already know this, but I'll just pop it in there for good measure. And Jesus obviously declared that the church could never be overcome. On this rock I will build my church, he said, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Or behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the age or the end of the world. So he made promises about the perpetuity, the indestructibility of the church. But that's the church as such, the church universal as such. It doesn't mean that the church in Germany will last, or that the church in the United States will last. And there are whole regions in the world where the church once flourished, and now it's completely obliterated under feet of sand now. So when you think of the Muslim world in the Middle East, that was all Catholic. There was a time for several hundred years when the Mediterranean basin was entirely Catholic. So Egypt and Libya and Syria and the other North African countries, of course, Syria is not a North African country, but the Holy Land, Lebanon, Turkey, these were all Catholic lands. And now in many, if not most of these places, the Catholic Church has been utterly obliterated. So that doesn't belie what Jesus said about the perpetuity of his church. It just doesn't mean that he promised that it would be present in any given locality forever. So we should take that as well as part of the catacomb experiences that some people find themselves in. And if it's the Lord's will that they live in the catacombs for a while, or if it's the Lord's will that he doesn't actively will this, but if in his permissive will, if he permits the church to be overcome in some locality, well, blessed be God. I'd rather not see that happen, but if that's God's permissive will, then the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. But as for you and me, the best thing we can do is to just keep going forward, be good Catholics, follow Jesus, say our prayers, go to Mass, receive the sacraments, love God with all our heart, mind, and strength, and love our neighbors as ourselves. And if we're doing those things, then regardless of what may be happening in a given country with its bishops or things like that, the person himself is going to be okay. That's, I think, the roadmap through whatever craziness might come our way. Thanks, Terry. I appreciate the call. How about Vince now in Santa Fe, New Mexico? Good morning, Vince.
Thank you, Patrick. Let me ask my question, and then you can forge out the details. Should I allow my son to attend a presentation, my 12-year-old son, to attend a presentation by Planned Parenthood regarding adolescent development.
You mean sex education?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean,
Let me give you the reasons for it.
Okay. I just want to have some Planned Parenthood mood music just to get everybody in the mood to talk about Planned Parenthood. Go ahead, Vince.
The reason I ask is my son, he's a good kid. He's an altar boy. He's a very well-mannered kid, very smart. And he knows where his values come from. He knows his values come from the home. This is a chance that I saw for him to apply his critical thinking skills. I try to train him in the Socratic method of thinking of inquiry. Mm-hmm. And I thought this might be a good time for him to actually stand up because of the sermon our priest gave about abortion this past Sunday, about standing up for what's right.
And I thought... Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Vince. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually what I was going to say. So I'm glad you said it first. My first bit of advice would be, if your son is well-schooled and prepared and confident, then it would be a good idea, it seems to me, for him to be there so that he could speak up. Now, if your son weren't in that position for whatever reason, then I would say probably a bad idea to send him. If he's malleable and susceptible to their propaganda, I wouldn't send a 12-year-old into that situation if he wasn't prepared for it. But if your son's prepared for it, then go for it.
I think he is. I think it's kind of baptism by fire, but I think I prepared him to, you know, to anticipate their responses. There are no answers. Try to misdirect him, but I think he can see through all that. He's well. He knows. I say we read philosophy, we read logic, we read up on the Bible.
No, that's good, Vince. All of the above is good. So at that fork in the road, you can either send him into that baptism by fire, knowing that he's prepared for it, or you could say you're not prepared for it, so no, you don't go in. So I like the choice you're making.
Okay.
Yeah. Thumbs up for me.
Thank you very much, Patrick. God bless you and everybody there and everything you do.
Appreciate it, Vince. Thank you. And we'll say some prayers for your son, that he will be like Daniel in the lion's den. We don't want any ideological harm to come to him, but it sounds like he's prepared for it. So that's awesome. Let's go to Roberta now in Albuquerque. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, Patrick. I'm calling. My husband died last March.
I'm sorry.
We were mid-Lent. Thank you. And people told me that since he died during Lent, he went straight to heaven and bypassed purgatory. And the second part of my question is, people are quick to also tell me your husband's with you, he's watching over you, he's in your heart. And I find that hard to grasp, because if heaven is so great, why would you come back? You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. This is an example, Roberta. And first of all, my sincere condolences to you and your loss of your husband. May he rest in peace. This is why some people, they do more harm than good. They're trying to do something helpful, but they can do more harm than good by spouting things like that that are not true, or at the very least that they don't know if they're true or not. So let's take the first part. Whoever told you that because your husband died during the season of Lent that he automatically went to heaven, it's just simply false. The church has never taught that. The church doesn't teach that. That's some, you know, pious notion that somebody got into his head, and that's all. So I don't begrudge somebody trying to be helpful in giving you a condolence, but what they said to you is just simply wrong. It's just not true. When somebody dies, if he is in the state of grace, he's going to heaven no matter what. There's no other option. If you die in the state of grace, you're going to heaven. If, as the Bible says, you have to pass through the purifying flames of purgatory, as St. Paul describes in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, then you'll be in that state until, as it says there, he says he will be saved, but only as though passing through fire. So how long that process takes, nobody knows. And so if your husband were to have gone to purgatory, or perhaps is still in purgatory, and this, by the way, is one reason why the church urges us to continuously pray for the souls of those who have died, even for many years after they have died, forever, perpetually pray for them, because we don't know how long somebody might be in purgatory. He may already be in heaven, and we can pray that he is. But the fact of dying at a particular time of year or a particular liturgical season has no bearing whatsoever on whether or not you're going to be in heaven sooner or later. So with regard to that particular thing, I would just suggest that you continuously pray for your husband, pray the rosary for him, have masses celebrated for him if you're not already doing that. And when somebody tells you some foolish, pious notion like that, you can smile. Okay, thank you very much. Now, as to the other thing, the issue of him being in your heart, here too, I understand why people are trying to comfort you by saying he's watching over you or something like that. That too is probably not true most of the time. When somebody dies, at least this is what the great saints tell us, and certainly we can glean this from the Holy Bible as well, that when somebody dies, they're done here, and their job is to go into eternity, whether to hell or heaven. And if they're on their way to heaven, but they need time in purgatory to be purified, that's what they're doing. They're in purgatory being prepared for heaven. They're not watching over us. They're not like angels. Our deceased relatives are not hovering over our shoulders, smiling down at us and watching us. If they're in heaven, they certainly are, in the sense that they're there and they're praying for us, no doubt about that. But to just simply say that somebody whose loved one has died, and to try to comfort that person by these pious platitudes that are simply not true, I find that deeply unhelpful. And it sounds to me, Elena, as though it caused you some confusion or some, you know, not, I'm sorry, not Elena, it has caused you some, Roberta, some confusion or some discomfort. And I could understand why.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I just wanted clarification on that. You know, mm-hmm. when you lose someone, things are not clear for a while, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of mixed emotions. So I just wanted to ask you about that.
I'm glad you did. I really am. The last thing I would want to do would be to unsettle you in any way, especially as you're grieving the loss of your husband. May he rest in peace. But better that you should be, you know, in that hopeful trust of God's mercy and love for your husband, and be praying for him, and leave everything else to God.
Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome, Roberta. God bless you. I'll be right back. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Dance, Cyrus, dance. That's right. Dance your heart out, Cyrus. Dance like you just don't care. Dance like nobody's watching except me.
There's go get back to work.
I love my job.
Can Let's I stop to... dancing now?
No, keep dancing. Till I say stop. Let's go to Adriana in Miami. Adriana, excuse me. Welcome.
Yes, take out the speaker. Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon already.
Yeah.
No. Almost.
Just about.
I think I called yesterday, but it was like 10 minutes before the show ends, and so I didn't have time for
okay.
for it. Yes, I called him because I remember one show I couldn't stay for to listen to the whole show, but you were talking about dementia, and I think it was from your own experience from your dad. And we have, our family are living that situation with our dad. They're in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I'm here in Miami, and we are five brothers and sisters.
Okay.
And we're all over the place.
So what's going on? So when my dad, Your dad has dementia?
Yeah, my dad is with dementia for 2 years already diagnosed. And with the COVID, he got COVID, and that everything was worse with the COVID for him and okay. My mom. My mom is the main caregiver. I'm sorry for my English. It's not the, I'm Mexican.
No, está bien. Todo bien.
So it's hard for me. So she's taking care of him. She's doing very, very well for him, but not for her. She's getting into a big depression, and she thinks she's by herself. Nobody's helping her. And we're doing all we can to make her feel better and help her. And I go over there and spend time with her and from here.
Mm-hmm. But, so are you concerned about your mom's well-being because she's taking care of your father?
Yeah, and we don't know how to talk to her about her situation because she feels that she has to do that, and she doesn't. She has helpers. She has, she has people that is all the, 24 hours mm-hmm. with them.
Sounds to me, if you don't mind me interjecting here, it sounds to me like what would be helpful would be if you had a family conference. And you could do it by Zoom. I mean, unless you wanted to go to Mexico and have that kind of family conference together all in the same room, that would be ideal. But even if you can't do that, maybe you could have a conference call or a Zoom meeting or something. But just all of you together, you and your siblings, talk with your mom, let her know you love her. And you're so happy that she's taking care of your father that way, but she also has to take care of her own health. And then formulate a plan. So that among yourselves in the family, you come to some agreement as how best to make sure your mom is doing okay, and that whatever health issues she may have or other issues, that's being attended to as well. I wouldn't be in a position to be able to say do this or do that because I don't know what the circumstances are. But I can say that together as a family, you're far more likely to work out a situation where everybody's happy and everybody can agree to it. You see what I mean?
That we do, every time we talk to her, we assure her that we're with her, that she's doing a very... And we are concerned about her because my dad has his needs covered, but it's her about right now. But we cannot talk to her because she starts crying and she said that we don't know and we don't understand. So one of my questions is, she's very afraid of going to hell. So she's not dying because she even, that's what it worries us because she's mm-hmm. even talking about, it doesn't have any purpose for her to be alive and my dad also because anyway, so sometimes she talks about sad things.
Yeah, I think, go ahead and tell me what your question is, but I think this is something I can't help with. Because this is a family matter and you know her far better. I mean, I don't know her at all. I just don't think I've got, like I said, do this and you'll fix it or do that and you'll fix it. I think your family will have to come together as a group with your mom. And, you know, it may involve a little bit of tugging at her to get her to go in the right direction. But I just don't see how I can say do this or do that and it would fix the problem.
Yeah. My only question, maybe you can help me. Do you think it would be like beneficial or not talking to her about is she okay? You wanna die? It's okay. I mean, it's good that you're not afraid of dying. But if you don't, like telling her about not getting saved or going to
is she Catholic? You know, does she practice the faith?
She is, but she's. And she's always with the rosary, but the way she behaves is not like in communion with what she believes. Because
okay, yeah. So in other words, maybe she's a Catholic, but she's not really practicing her faith in a way that would bring her peace. So that would be my suggestion, Adriana. I would suggest that you and your brothers and sisters rally around your mom. She's doing something really heroic and taking care of your father, so you should thank her for that. I'm sure you do. But rally around her. And maybe this wouldn't happen in a single Zoom call or if you went home to Mexico to talk to her. Maybe it wouldn't happen all at once. But start the process and encourage her. Let her know Jesus loves you. He wants you to be happy. There's no need to fear. life can be plenty fearful, that's for sure, but there's no need to fear about your eternal salvation if you are close to Jesus. And maybe that will help her. I have a feeling it will. I'll have to leave it at that. But God bless you and your family, Adriana. I appreciate it. Let's go to Mike now in Providence, Rhode Island. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, maybe you already spoke about it, I just tuned in, was the priest that for the last 20 years is baptizing people by stating, we baptize you versus I, which nullifies the baptism. And I'm coming from a place where my first marriage was annulled, and I got remarried in the church. And one of the things on there was that for annulment of marriage is if you weren't baptized, it's not valid. And I was curious how that would impact the other sacraments. Let's say someone went through their whole life practicing, and then they find out, well, gee, my baptism isn't valid. Would that nullify all the sacraments?
It could have an effect.
Would they have to go through everything? And
some of them. Oh, go ahead, Mike. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and then the other part is what happens if you die and your baptism, you thought your baptism was valid, but it's invalid. Would you still be have original sin?
Right. So let's talk about those in order. So it is true that an invalid baptism has a cascading negative effect in someone's life if he or she has already has attempted to receive some of the other sacraments that would therefore also be invalid. Now, as it would connect to a marriage, certainly if the person is not baptized, then there would be no sacrament, the sacrament of holy matrimony, even though in a given situation the marriage could still be valid. So you mentioned the annulment process. The annulment process is the church's way of determining whether or not the marriage itself was valid. That's what it's dealing with, is the validity of the marriage. Now, it can become apparent that the marriage is also sacramental under certain circumstances. But if the person was in fact never baptized validly, then there's no question but that there would be no sacrament of holy matrimony. And that extends to other sacraments as well. So in the case of the sacrament of, let's say, confirmation or holy orders or anointing of the sick, or even for that matter, confession, all of those sacraments are dependent. And this is true of the Holy Eucharist as well, but in a somewhat different way. But these are all dependent upon the validity of baptism being present, because if somebody is not validly baptized, then none of the other sacraments have any effect at all. They can't be validly received for that reason. So in the question of marriage, it's going to be a twofold issue. One would be the validity question. The other would be the sacrament issue. And if there's no baptism, there's no sacrament. So what was the second question, Mike?
The second question is these people in Phoenix who had invalid baptisms, the priest was performing them for 20 years. So I was just curious, does that nullify their sacrament? Would they
after
have to
death?
Go through? And...
Yeah, so if it's an invalid baptism, it's an invalid baptism, it's an invalid baptism. So the condition of original sin was not eradicated. The sins and the effects of sin in the life of the person were not eradicated. Sanctifying grace was not conferred. So the soul would be as inert today as it was 20 years ago if there were an invalid baptism 20 years ago. That's just the nature of the sacrament. But to your question about the afterlife, what happens in the case of somebody who in good faith thought she was baptized and received the sacraments in good faith and prayed and loved God and sought to, you know, to be in the state of grace and then dies only to find out, I was never baptized. What the church says in that situation is that would be a scenario in which God, who is sovereign, would, if he chose to do so, confer grace necessary for salvation on that person. Because especially in a case like that, it's not that person's fault. The person didn't know and acted in good faith, and the Lord knows that. So what we do in a case like that is we just simply trust in the mercy and forgiveness of God. The church doesn't say, on the one hand, that that person is definitely going to go to heaven. But I think the likelihood is quite high. And I think that knowing how God is and he loves us and wants us to be in heaven for the sake of those who, through no fault of their own, found themselves at the end of their lives having been fooled into thinking that they had received the sacraments but really didn't, the Lord will take all that into account, and that's what we trust in.
Got it. Yeah, I was just curious because there was an article about the priest that made a mistake for 20 years of baptisms, and I was just curious how that would impact the parish, just in general, the bishop came out and said the baptisms are null. And I was just curious how that would impact other sacraments that these faithful people have made. But, you know, it's a, the priest apologized and said it was a mistake because he was saying we baptize versus I baptize you.
Yeah. Yeah, I covered that in detail a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I didn't listen. I'm sorry. But
no, it's okay. If you go to Mike, I got to take a break, but if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, look at the Monday show and you'll see the link for it. And you can listen to, I have an extended, probably well over an hour discussion on this topic about baptisms. And it was quite extensive. So in lieu of being able to talk further, because I have to take a break, check that out, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. And I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Lent is right around the corner, and Father Rocky has prepared a brand new set of video-based Lenten lessons on the Mass that are free to you every single day, starting with Ash Wednesday, all the way through to Easter morning. And you can sign up for them for free, no obligation, no salesman will call. Just go to relevantradio.com/Lent and get ready, and they'll start arriving in your mailbox every single day. And by the time you get to Easter, your appreciation for the Mass will be all the more deep for the sake of having seen these. So check it out, relevantradio.com/Lent. Let's go to Ray in El Monte, California. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning. I have to know if I'm correct or not. I'm certain that my father-in-law experienced elder abuse, and my wife and I were taking care of him for many, many years till he passed away. But in between, all of a sudden, a young son had come to visit who we hadn't seen for many, many years. He would take him on trips and so forth. And every time we returned, he was more and more afraid of us, my wife and I. And eventually he stopped talking to us. Long story short, he passed away. And then the hate mail started to come from all the family, what we had done, absconded with my father-in-law's wealth, accusing us of all kinds of horrible things. And it just kept coming and coming and coming. Eventually, there was a reading of the will, and the youngest brother got everything. When I told my wife that my father-in-law was experienced elder abuse, and that's why his attitude was changing towards us, she wouldn't believe it. But the hate mail was so terrible that I think she started to believe I had done something. You know, it was so horrible.
Your wife, social media, the whole thing.
Yeah, my wife started to think, I believe, that I had something to do with it. And that was hurtful. But in the end, what happens is my brother-in-law and his wife came to my home very late in the evening. I mean, like 11. And said, you know, I'd like to talk to you, Ray. And I said, Sure, tell me the question you have for me.
What would you want to ask me about
this? The question is that after, when they came to my home, they asked me for forgiveness. And the worst part about it was that I could see the relief in my wife's face because I kind of think she started to believe I had done such a horrible thing, which was to take all my father-in-law's wealth. You know, he was not a
guy. Okay, so I'm not a lawyer, obviously, and I'm not a counselor, so I can't help in those areas. But is there a question for me about what happened?
I had to reach very deep to forgive them. And finally, I did. You know, I said, you know what? I'll forgive both of them. They came here and asked me, and they asked me, please don't tell anybody. They really asked me that. So I had to pray on it, and to this day, I haven't.
So tell me, what's your question for me, Ray?
My wife. Well, since then, my wife's family has completely left us. We're not invited to anything. They've snubbed us completely. And my question is, should I just let them go and tell my wife, just let them go now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a painful scenario that you're describing. I can only imagine what you're feeling as a result of it because you love your family even still. But there comes a time where if it's irreparable and if they just simply want nothing to do with you and you can't force the relationship back into what it once was, then maybe that's the only choice, is to just let it go and hope and pray that there can be some reconciliation down the road. And sometimes that does happen. Sometimes some time needs to pass before people are at a point where they can start piecing things back together again. Sometimes it never happens in this life. But if you think that the best way to resolve it is to just do nothing, sometimes that's the right thing to do. But I wouldn't be able to know, just given these circumstances, what's the best thing to suggest.
One more question is that I talked to my priest, and he said, well, you know, your father-in-law was gaslighted, and I don't know what that meant.
Backsliding is a term that's typically used to describe somebody who once was devout and, you know, in the case of Catholics, went to Mass and all of the above, and then just backslid into sin, whatever the sin was, and then just sort of faded away from a practice of the faith. So if that's the case, then I would say redouble your prayers for your father and just ask the Lord to have mercy on him. That would be what I would do, Ray. God bless you, and thanks for the call. Let's go now to Sue in Campbell, California. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Patrick. I'm driving, so is it all right if I put you on speaker?
The way you're talking to me right now is perfect. Can we do it that way?
Well, as long as I don't get pulled over by the police.
Yeah, the laws.
So I really need to. I'm gonna
go ahead and give it a try. We'll see if we can make do.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm bending the rules
okay,
here.
Okay, how's this? Okay,
we'll make do. Go ahead, Sue.
Okay, so first of all, I wanted to extend my great appreciation for Relevant Radio because it has, in so many areas of my life, enriched it. And so I wanted to say thank you. I really appreciate all that
all of you do.
Yes, absolutely. So the reason why I'm calling is I've already contacted a priest, and because of COVID, they're not able to assist me. What has happened in a nutshell is from Christmas Day for a month, almost to the day, I was living with I live in an apartment complex, and below me was a woman who I befriended. Come to find out, she had paranoid schizophrenic. She was a paranoid schizophrenic who basically terrorized me and all of our neighbors for a month. It was horrific. I, even though she's moved out, and, you know, my heart goes out to her, she had demons. I mean, she was just really fighting the fight. She has since moved out, but it feels like there is just this ominous feeling when I walk past her apartment. I just feel so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading everything I can, you know, as I mentioned before, because of COVID, a priest won't come out and do a blessing.
That seems so amazing to me that we're more or less past COVID now. I mean, I find it shocking that a priest wouldn't be able to come out and do something as simple as bless a house because of COVID. That doesn't compute for me, but anyway. So are you wondering what you can do yourself in that situation?
Absolutely. And I've been, you know, I've been reciting prayers, you know, and I'm just at a loss. I really like where I live, and I don't want to move because you never know what you're moving into anyway. So, I just wanted your advice.
What I would do if I were in your situation, Sue, is I would bring some holy water from church. And I would sprinkle the outside of that apartment unit, sprinkle the door, sprinkle the area around it, because obviously holy water is a reminder of the victory of Jesus over the powers of evil through baptism. And that's what we remember, especially when we bless ourselves with holy water, is the victory of Jesus. And so I would do that. I would nuke that place with holy water in whatever way you can. If you wanted to, you know, do something more along those lines in your own apartment, you know, to bless your apartment. And when the priests finally are willing to come to your home, ask them to do that. Have images of Jesus and Mary in your home to remind not only yourself, but also any entity that might be lurking around that you are a follower of Jesus and that your house is off limits to those evil spirits. I would continue to pray. I would pray the rosary, which is a great weapon against diabolical activity. If you wanted to, some people would do things like, and I know I'm going to get emails and I know I'm going to get people on Twitter telling me, tell her about blessed salt or tell her to put a St. Benedict medal. Those are all things that you could do too, if you wanted to do that. Some people, I think, get a little bit overboard on those things, and they may see a kind of superstitious quality in a St. Benedict medal or blessed salt. But in any case, these are sacramentals that are available to you, and you could employ them as a way to set limits and to maybe reclaim that area for the Lord. Those are things that I would do if I were in your situation.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've already done those things or not, but those are things that come to my mind.
So I had asked, sorry to keep interrupting. So I had, that was one of my initial questions to the priest, if I could just get holy water. And they said, well, just come fill your container with water and we'll bless it. But what kind of container do you bring?
Anything you want.
I don't want to just bring anything you want.
Anything you want. Yeah, you can get a plastic bottle of some sort. A Catholic, I don't know if you're familiar with Easter's Catholic Goods and Catholic Bookstore. They're in the Sacramento area. That's not close to you, obviously. But there are other Catholic bookstores in the area that would sell holy water bottles, little plastic bottles for that.
Oh.
Yeah. You could get that on Amazon, believe it or not.
I just wanted to do it in the most revelant way. I just wanted to do it with dignity, and just taking a water bottle just didn't seem very appropriate. So,
well, it's not inappropriate, and I understand where you're coming from. It is ideal, I guess, if you had a little holy water bottle that said holy water on it, but that's not necessary. It can be any kind of container. And if you fill it up at the parish, usually there'll be a metal holy water container in the vestibule somewhere where you can fill up your holy water vial there. Many people do that. We do that at our parish. So that would be my suggestion.
Because of COVID, they stopped the holy water being exposed in the church.
Oh my gosh. All these extravagant, unnecessary precautions. Just don't get me started on that, Sue. In any case, I hope that some of these measures will be helpful to you and bring you the peace of mind that you're looking for, and that any evil spirits who may be there will be driven away. Please, God. Thank you. Let's go to Arthur now in Woodland, California. Hi, Arthur.
Hello, Patrick. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I had a question. So my 7-year-old daughter is preparing for First Communion and confession. And she does go to a Catholic school, but I was wondering if you had any recommendations as far as, since, you know, being a parent and a grandparent, for examination of conscience.
Mm-hmm. Well, for adults, or at least children who are a little bit older than that, than she is, I would recommend the Confession Helper on the Relevant Radio app. There is an examination of conscience. The only thing is that for a little kid, most of the things in this examination of conscience wouldn't apply, because little kids at the age of 7 are not even going to know about some of these sins, much less having committed them. So my advice, Arthur, would be to get in touch with the people at Holy Heroes, and their website is holyheroes.com. I have no connection with them. I receive no benefit from recommending them, but I know them personally. And they specialize in resources for the Mass and the sacraments for kids. So I am almost positive that they would have an examination of conscience for little ones. And that would be age appropriate for them, with the kinds of sins that they, you know, did I tell my parents a lie? Did I not clean my room when I was told to clean my room? Or did I make fun of people? Things that little people like that are more likely to bump into. That would be where I would go to find an examination of conscience for a 7-year-old.
No, perfect. Thank you so much. Yeah, and just for reference, I came across Welcome Home, a book from Ignatius Press, where they have a examination of conscience, and they kind of list out questions for every commandment. And I just have personally found that extremely helpful. And so I didn't know if there's something similar for children. Age appropriate. So I appreciate it.
I have a feeling. Oh, you're welcome. I have a feeling Holy Heroes can help. And if they don't already have one, then I'm sure your call will prompt them to get and, you know, an examination of conscience for little kids. I hope that's helpful, Arthur. Thank you. Let's go now to Marie waiting in Tampa. Hi, Marie.
Hello, Patrick McGrid?
Yes, hi.
Oh, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just love your program. It's helped me so much over the years. I accidentally came across you a year and a half ago on the radio. I want to know, because one lady called earlier today about her husband died last March, and people were trying to be kind to her and help her and say, you know, your husband's with you, and he's... But I don't understand. If you're in purgatory, are they concerned about you? Are they still in the communion of saints? Or if can they come back to you? Only if...
So, yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
What?
No, just we're really short on time. I want to make sure I can give you an answer.
In heaven, can they come back as a visitation?
Okay, so the answer to the last question is yes, if God permits it. And there are instances where souls in purgatory, not to mention hell, as well as heaven, have at times been permitted by God to do that. But those in purgatory, I think we can safely assume, they're not focusing on you or me or anyone here in this life. They're focusing on their sufferings in preparation for going into heaven. So it doesn't seem as though they're made aware of anything going on in this life. Unfortunately, Marie, that's all the time I've got, but thank you. God bless you. See you tomorrow.